русскоговорящей аудитории. Я скажу несколько слов на английском, затем переключусь на родной язык. Dear colleagues, thank you for coming for our regional session on Eastern Europe and Central Asia. The session will be chaired by Michel Kazachkin and me, Alexei Bobrik. Working languages of our session will be Russian, English and Spanish. And I strongly encourage those who do not speak at least Russian and English to take earphones. Given the fact that the majority of audience speak Russian, I hope you will allow me to continue in Russian. Уважаемые коллеги, я продолжу вести сессию.
Dear colleagues, I want to talk in Russian. And I want to say a few words about the goals about our regional session. We have two goals. First of all, to discuss in the framework of our conference what is
моментом наиболее острым вопросом в сфере ВИЧ-СПИД перед Восточной Европой.
Urgent challenges that we have in Eastern Europe and Central Asia. And the second thing would be what are the lessons that we have learned. Those lessons could be interesting. Our experience could be interesting for other participants of this conference from other regions of the world. For example, as UNAIDS, which infection among the users of injectional drugs also is a pretty interesting challenge for everybody. I want to talk a little bit about the agenda of our session. Our session is going to be comprised out of three parts. First, we have three presentations. Then we have the time for questions and answers. And the third part will be for discussions of the most important urgent questions and problems in our area. Since the time is short, I want to remind each one of the presenters that only 12 minutes for each one of the presentations. Also, please, everybody that asks the questions, please try to limit the time to 1 minute, under 1 minute. Since I am in charge, I do leave the right. If somebody talks longer than 1 minute, I might have to stop you and ask you to let another person talk. So first, I want to invite Alexander Tsumefich Galiusov, the person that is in charge of the government agency from 1996. He is the chairman of the union of the former Soviet republics on their questions and matters of AIDS.
Okay. A ver, vamos a
cambiate ese y ver.
Pues sí, ya lo tengo. Muy bien, estimados delegados, ahora sí.
Говорят, что мы доставили выступать на этой сессии. Как вы знаете, в настоящее время одно из важнейших направлений государственной политики в странах Центральной Азии и Восточной Европы является сохранение здоровья населения и снижение уровня смертности. И в этой связи проблема ВИЧ-СПИДа, она является
чрезвычайно проблема respuesta importantísima. La epidemia llegó a la región en los 80 y actualmente, después de mucho tiempo, podemos ya evaluar los daños y evaluar todos los aspectos del daño, los políticos y los sociales, los daños ocurridos, y también podemos validar los éxitos alcanzados. Y también podemos entonces validar los años que llevamos ya de estar enfrentando tales retos. Quiero decirles que para poder detener la epidemia y para poder detener el avance de tal, es un alcance que todavía no cumplimos. Desafortunadamente tenemos casos nuevos que siguen surgiendo año tras año. Y podemos hablar de las tendencias que nos permiten estabilizar esta tendencia, la tendencia de la gente enferma. Estos son los datos estadísticos. Y pues podemos hablar de las estadísticas del año 2007. Aquí la diseminación de la infección en la región de Europa del Este y Asia Central es una diseminación que está coincidiendo con
el crisis moral de la sociedad.
Распространение ВИЧ-инфекции сопровождалось такими эпидемиями, как расширение рынка платных сексуальных услуг, рост наркомании, рост инфекций, передаваемых половым путем.
And the growth in the infections that are transmitted
эпидемии
in a sexual
в нашем
way. What are the specifics of this epidemic in our region? I want to show it to you in this slide.
То, что ведущим путем передачи у нас продолжает оставаться
way to we are using injected drugs. 65% is the use of parenteral drugs. Most, the biggest range of their epidemics is actually touches on the youngest sector of our population, people 15 to 30 years old. And the third is that constantly we see the growth in the percentage of women that are getting infected, increasing proportion of women, and also the growth in the number of babies that are born from these women. The next bullet point is there is a growing epidemic of drug use, and in our countries of Eastern Europe and Central Asia, the drug addiction is spreading and is spreading and growing. The market of the sex industry is growing and spreading. We have a constant increase in number of HIV-infected patients who develop AIDS and they do need treatment. There is also a growth in the amount of people that have developed secondary diseases.
At the same time, here, this slide shows a percentage distribution and ratios of factors of transmission of HIV infection in our region based on each country. At the same time, it is necessary to know that despite of this 20-year history of development of infection, it is still concentrated with the highly vulnerable strata of population and has very low prevalence among general population. And in many respects, these are results of the efforts taken by governments in the region. Where are these steps taken by the governments? First of all of the countries of the region created national interagency commissions combating spread of HIV infections. And even though in the majority of cases, decisions by these interagency committees have only advising role, nevertheless, they influence the level and amount of funding, and also they are conducive to creating a number of regulatory acts that are mandatory for implementation by both government and non-governmental players. Also, there's a great deal of progress in creating a body of law. And in Central Asia, there was developed a model law. And this model law was considered by Interparliamentary Assembly and was approved by it. This model law took in the best experience and the best models from legislations of all our countries, and also national systems of monitoring and surveillance. Epidemiological surveillance is also expanding and growing, so it allows us better put a finger on the scale of the epidemic and be more reliable in determining the scale and the prevalence of epidemic. And the fourth important point is HIV/AIDS prevention among vulnerable populations. You look at this slide and you see geographically tied different types of programs that are implemented in these countries, even though these programs are constantly growing and the coverage of vulnerable segments of population is also increasing. Unfortunately, they're not able to change radically the spread of infection. And unfortunately, we're dealing with another factor where the bulk of the population in our countries have negative attitude toward all these programs, both educational programs and prophylaxis. Unfortunately, we're yielding the fruits of this nearsighted policy that was perpetuated primarily by mass media, that were creating negative image of HIV positive person, and they were fear mongering and intimidating the larger population. And until now, HIV issue in our countries are viewed as an issue for marginal groups, and such issues as human rights and stigmatizing HIV positive people are still relevant, and these are huge issues for different segments of the government sector, both healthcare, law enforcement, and education. Also, I'd like to stop at this issue of significant progress in antiretrovirus therapy. In all of these countries, we've seen positive shifts. You can look at this slide and see that the number of patients covered by ART is steadily growing. And only 2 years ago, we know that the access to ART was pretty much ephemeric. Only few people had access to the ART. Now this access has grown tremendously. In some countries, pretty much almost 100% those who are willing to receive ART are receiving it. And now we have a different issues. We're talking about commitment and to continuance of this ART. This is a whole different issue. The sixth issue I'd like to raise here is people living with HIV and their communities and the role that they play in combating the spread of infection. The role of non-governmental organizations and civil society is hard to overestimate, and the role of these organizations is constantly growing, both in coordinating bodies. Pretty much every coordinating body at the national level has representatives of this community. I would like to give you the latest statistics. Like in Russia today, the Commission on Government Procurement comprises of some people who are living with HIV, but the issue still remains. And it's a huge problem in the sense that the government is mandated to support both in creating and supporting of non-governmental sector, primarily financial. In the recent international conference that took place in Moscow in May, it was said loud and clear, and now we are looking at the approaches of direct funding from the national budget of non-governmental organizations. And we understand that if we fund these organizations directly, we've got to have some deliverable. There's got to be some criteria for efficient utilization of these resources. And the last issue is regional cooperation, international cooperation within the region. As you know, the issues of HIV and AIDS were dominating agendas of many high-level meetings, both G8 and Commonwealth of Independent States, Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and a number of others. And the current stage of combating HIV and AIDS can be characterized by political commitments at the highest level and increase of funding provided both at the national and the international level. However, even now, it is not enough. And now, when issues of HIV and AIDS become critically important for discussion, not just between the heads of the states and leaders of healthcare of various nations, it becomes a critically important issue for private sector, for business sector. Therefore, we need to discuss coordination between government and private sector at the regional level, and also grow the potential of the entire region to answer this challenge. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I would like to introduce our next speaker, Konstantin Vezhentsev. Dr. Konstantin Vezhentsev has been working in the area of HIV/AIDS from 1989. Together with Doctors Without Borders, he piloted the first project in Ukraine. And from 2003 till 2006, was working at the regional level in the area of access for IDUs, including for Global Fund in Ukraine and in Russia. And now he's the head of a treatment department of All Ukrainian Network. Thank you very much, Michelle. Thank you very much for this invitation to participate in this session. I think that in the historic context of international conferences on AIDS and HIV, Eastern European sessions are one of the driving factors of exchange of information and exchange of ideas and highlighting the main priorities for our region and for our countries. And I'm very happy that at this session we're discussing issues that were raised at the regional conference, and I think that we will attract more attention to those elements of development in our countries that would help us work out a consolidated position towards solutions at the global level. And I would like to share some of the first steps that our organization is taking as one of the recipients of Global Fund, jointly with the government sector, in order to provide greater access to treatment for and services for marginalized groups. This is the key component of services in Ukraine now. In my presentation, I used a few very important documents that are sort of a toolkit that we have at our disposal, and primarily it is GFATM sixth round table application from Ukraine, which stipulated a number of program issues and priorities, and also a comprehensive external evaluation of the national AIDS response in Ukraine that just wrapped up in June of this year. And also thanks to the Institute of Open Society, this is the last report of International Harm Reduction Development Program. Ukraine is in concentrated phase of epidemic. According to experts, 440,000 cases of HIV registered in Ukraine. The prevalence is one of the highest in the region. It's 1.63%. Prevalence among IDUs is the highest, about 41.8%. And there is an increase of heterosexual transmission. But again, this is a concentrated phase. These are sexual partners of IDUs. But do we see feminization of the epidemic among women IDUs, and Ukraine remains the leader in the region on the rate of incidence. However, a number of drastic steps was taken in order to expand access to treatment, and these slides show the access to treatment that happened to the skyrocketing rise of HIV infection. A few hundred of patients that in a central clinic in Kyiv, in the capital of the country. Now we have more than 800. This is up to 8,000. So there's a huge scale, both in procurement and distribution and training of personnel. And of course, we have epidemiological proof of efficiency and effectiveness of national therapy. And the first time we registered new AIDS cases in 2007, but again, we have a fairly high mortality rate, 65% of AIDS as a consequence of TB, and 65% of all deaths in the country are of opportunistic infections and co-infections such as TB, and also increasing of scale is the key criteria for us, and we'll pursue and continue our work at the sixth round of Global Fund and within the framework of the national program of Ukraine of combating HIV and AIDS. In order to overcome these obstacles, so we set up strategic goals for us is expanding of innovative, complex program of treatment and care for marginalized groups. I'm not talking only about IDUs, but some other groups such as mobile populations, immigrants, sex workers, MSMs, and convicts. Expansion of prevention program and integration of treatment and prophylaxis for marginalized and vulnerable groups, SMSMs, sex workers, and convicts. We're now dealing with decentralization of ART. Starting November, we start these programs in sites that are outside of the network of AIDS service, primarily under the supervision of the specialized centers. There will be pilot sites that would include interdisciplinary professionals, and we will include other workers, not necessarily clinicians, who would be looking at the comprehensive programs at the various sites. And we also introduce new programs of working with IDUs that we borrowed from Colombian University. This is a single window program, one-stop shop. There are three sites. One is Kiev, the second one is Poltava, and the third one is Cherkasy. This will be the centers of integrated care and assistance. They will work both with OST and ART and psychological assistance and prophylaxis and prevention, and also integration of program of diagnostics and treatment for TB. I'll talk about it later. And one of the most important aspects is the expansion of OST. Now we're talking about opiate substitute therapy, not like a pilot program, but we're talking about a national program that is supervised by the president himself. And now we're facing a lot more challenges than those advocacy programs than we had pursued to make this possible in Ukraine. First of all, we're talking about access to OST at TB clinics, and access to OSTs to people who are hospitalized at specialized hospital, and also access to OST to centers where patients are taking ARTs. And I think if we combine those centers, so we would be able to consolidate this integration of OST and ART. And also we're talking about OST at the penitentiary system. A lot is done to do it, but not enough. And thanks to International Alliance and a number of recipients and partners, last month a decree was signed to distribute methadone in 146 sites, and these are TB clinics and specialized centers are lagging behind a little bit, but I hope we will catch up with them. So far, there are only three sites at these special centers, but there are 146 sites. And up to 5,700 people that would cover by those sites within the alliance. Prevention program is unfortunately not very effective, even though we have a large number of IDUs are covered. Unfortunately, these are just cumulative indices, and there's not enough coverage of this group by these prevention programs. There is no review of quality of this program. Sometimes the programs do not meet the needs of target groups, and we don't have enough care at hospitals and inpatient clinics. And also, we have a change of fad for different drugs. We have so-called the white wave now. The hardest target group for us is young people between 17 and 21. But through the centers of integration that I was talking about, it would be possible to include a component, a classic component of harm reduction, and we hope it will be an integral part of the care and service that we would provide for vulnerable groups. What are the most important factors for reforming? First of all, is ensuring target financing by the government for this program. The government has already taken a commitment on financing OST for 300 people, but we are going to pursue in coverage and also in expanding the program of harm reduction, and also we will talk about the coordination at the central level. Since the treatment group is very efficient, that involves Alliance and the Ministry of Health, we have to provide stricter guidelines for review of these programs. We would like to provides similar stringent review factors for prevention programs. And we also need to look at the review of the regulatory base and legal base that is restrictive and creates obstacle for ease of providing services. And we would like to break this tradition that is a legacy of the past 10 years, and so the system will be more efficient. And the next component is providing sustainability and stability of procurement. Last month, we have an expert evaluation of the entire procurement procedure, from registration of medication and clinical quality control and review. And based on these new guidelines, I hope we assure a better procedure of procurement, just like our neighbors in Russia are doing, and I'm very encouraged by the previous speaker. And Estonia is doing some progress as well. So reform of the prevention program, and also a reform of the program of care and services for vulnerable categories of population, and stability and sustainability of financing. And the programs are built not by our not by ourselves, but it depends on the efficiency of the review by the recipients. Thank you very much. That's the main emphasis of our group.
Konstantin, let's please me invite the next person, the doctor of medical scientist. He's the head of of the lab at the infections, at the Institute of the Infection. She is in charge of the infectious disease at the Republic of Tajikistan. Professor Farida Tishkova. Dear respected chairman and respected delegates, my respected chairman and respected delegates, I want to give you some of their conclusions from the conference on the issue of AIDS, their international conference in 2008. There were 2,056 participants from 52 countries. 16 countries actually sent official delegates. The subject matter was to broaden the access, to broaden their prevention and support for everybody. We wanted to bring an opportunity for political and scientific leaders, for people that live with AIDS, and also for civilians, in order to mobilize the efforts to broaden the response to the epidemics. We wanted to strengthen our programs of prevention, especially for the vulnerable groups. We wanted to get experience from our government agencies and talk about the scientific program. The program of this conference was structured on the basis of 3 days and three themes. The first day we talked about the epidemics. The second day was dedicated to the prevention, and we talked about the integrated services and care. There are three committees that worked on it: the science, the civic society. We had discussions, roundtable discussion, and we had panels. There are some other activities. We had a commercial exhibition. We had a space where people for discussion. I want to say that the village, the youth village, was one of the new concepts that was introduced for this conference, and we find those very successful. The conference gave an opportunity for politicians, for scientists, and for medical professionals, for people that live with HIV, and for representatives of the civil society to discuss the most important problems of the spread of HIV infection in our region. The participants of the conference talked about the key issues of the epidemics in our region. We talked about their infection that is passed by using IDU, the pathology of hepatitis and TB, and their rapid growth of the numbers of people that are in need of this therapy. We greeted the positive tendencies and the newly opened opportunities for treatment since the financing has been growing. We also got more political support, and the society in general was ready to fight the epidemics. Their national and regional initiatives also have been growing in development. On the other side, there is a lot of challenge in order to work in an integrated way, in order to grant access to people, to the health services, access to family planning, access to child adoption, and others. On the other hand, the conference showed that the fight against the HIV and AIDS is a new problem. It's very challenging and involves a lot of issues. Some realization of some of their activities or the work that we do could be in conflict with some of their laws and regulations in different regions of our countries. Since HIV and AIDS are a huge problem, we don't have enough intersectorial interaction in the work combating this disease. The discussions during this conference showed that a lot of us are concerned about the following key issues. We are running behind of what we have to do. Our response is not adequate, especially in the area of vertical transmission of disease and also in the field of prevention of AIDS and HIV, in the group of IDUs, in the people that are involved in sex business and others. In the field of access to health care, especially prevention, the illegal immigrants are actually challenged. Also, the stigma is pretty high in our region, and the vulnerable populations suffer. We don't have enough access for ART for people that are in prisons. Quite a few initiatives are not scientifically based, and we should be aware of those. Also, the medical social support is not spread enough yet, and on the background, in general, the treatment is widening and broadening. There is not enough money spent for purchasing the HIV medication in different regions. We cannot accept the low level of high-quality treatment for HIV and AIDS. There is not enough state health care agencies that are involved in this work. For people that live with HIV, their response is not adequate enough in the field of secondary diseases like TB and hepatitis C, and not enough care and efforts is done to prevent the horizontal transmission to babies. The lack of studying the situation in the group of vulnerable men that have sex with other men. The level of participation of civil society is not sufficient. And the people that live with HIV are not involved in decision making in the field of HIV and AIDS. There is not enough mechanism in place in order to work in the field of HIV and AIDS, AIDS, and we don't have enough resources to financial resources to put in after the grants from abroad expire. The impact on the conference. There is independent evaluation of the impact of the conference. The web questionnaire is distributed to a number of participants that was done by a Sydney-based company, and these are the results. The majority of the participants, 88%, said that they were satisfied with the results of the conference, and more than 60% said that they're starting to think about changing their work. They started to think how to improve their work as a result of the information that they got during the conference. 68% of the conference reported that it actually changed and improved the work in their AIDS field. They will change some of the programs that they work in. Now their effect on the level of the whole country. 68% of the people asked said that the conference actually influenced the direction of the work in the field of HIV in their country and also affects the political tendencies. The results also showed that there is a general support for the conference, and they stated that the conference actually fulfilled the goals that it stated. It gave an opportunity for key people from each region to exchange their points of views and their experience. This evaluation also showed that there is a need to have during the future conference to address the difficulties and challenges in the work in the field of HIV, and especially work in the field of prevention and scientific programs. In addition to that, there were a few problems and a few subjects, other subjects raised. Their conference showed that it had a positive influence on the work in the field of HIV and AIDS in the countries that participated. Thank you very much. Now, we have 40 up to 45 minutes for questions and hopefully for the answers. Our presenters will be answering the questions. Everybody that will be asking the questions in Russian, English, or Spanish, please come to their microphone. I want you, before we starting those questions and answers session, I want to add a few words. Since I entered this conference at the very last minute, I would like to speak in English.
Let me say a few words as a matter of introduction to the discussion and in the context. First, that this is the third regional session I'm attending in this room at this conference, and this is the best attended session, which I find wonderful for the region. Second, I'd like to thank Alexei for inviting me to co-chair the session with him. Unfortunately, Anna Sharakashvili couldn't be present with us today. Congratulations to all. That's my first message. Congratulations for your commitment. Congratulations for the results that are achieved. All of us in Moscow at the last conference, and we just heard from Farida Tishkova, all of us felt the difference between the conference 2 years ago and the conference in 2008. However, we are far, far, very far from where we would all wish to be in the region. First, we do witness concentrated epidemics, and certainly this is the epidemiological way we should approach the epidemic in the region. But these concentrated epidemics in many parts of the region, including Russia and, of course, Ukraine, is on the verge of a generalized epidemic, and in Ukraine actually fits within the definition of a generalized epidemic. Second, I believe, and I believe you also share with me, that there is still in the region a lot of underestimation of the burden of disease and of the implications, the medical, the social implications of the epidemic. Third, there is an urgent need to improve the relationship between the civil society and the government in the region, in most of the countries, so that there is truly a national consensus that is being built. We cannot fight an epidemic without a consensus of all those whose talents are needed to fight an epidemic. Fourth, there is an urgent need to exponentially increase our efforts in prevention, including PMTCT. I cannot understand that a G8 country still has the sort of figures on PMTCT that we were presented. Access to treatment remains poor. Go to the 2008 UNAIDS report. When it comes to figures on number of people receiving antiretroviral therapy in the world, the Eastern European and Central Asian region is just a tiny sort of yellow thing. That cannot remain. We do have to move. So some of the statistics, Sasha, can look good. And I didn't understand your slide where 93% of people were receiving antiretroviral treatment. I don't know what's the 100% there, but I'm sure it is not the 100% of people who are in need in the country. We need more attention to the co-infections, of course to tuberculosis, but also to hepatitis, because the epidemic, as every speaker said, is so linked to IV drug use. And finally, of course, we really need to change the speed at which we are paying attention and leading our efforts in the fight for access to prevention and care for MSM, sex workers, prisoners. Now I have come somehow to hate these expressions. One is vulnerable groups, and the other is fight against stigma and discrimination, because we've been using them so many times that they have become sort of generic words, and I think it's an easy way for us to escape our responsibilities, because we're talking about basic social equity. We're talking about fighting a disease. We're talking about basic human rights, including access to decent care and access to human dignity. Obviously, and Constantine and Alexander stressed that in their interventions, we need to increase by major factors our efforts towards IDUs. I'm confident Russia one day will come to methadone. It will take time. That country cannot persist as an isolated island in the world when the evidence for the benefits of harm reduction, including opioid substitution, is so compelling. It will come, but we need to push. We need constant efforts. It's not a fight. It's explaining the facts. It's entering into the dialogue. And of course, it's, as you said, Alexander, it's really facing some of the social obstacles, the misunderstandings, and refusing that part of the population is just neglected, rejected in a society that, after so much trauma, has to come together and build solidarity. So thank you all again. I'm very concerned about the epidemic in the region, very concerned. But I also know your commitment. I know the skills. I know the talents of the health workers, of the civil society movement. I know there is funding. Funding is available from the government, from Global Fund, and I hope the funding will increase. And I would like to congratulate you, as I have seen that in round 8 of the Global Fund request for proposals, there was a very significant increase in proposals and in the amount of funds requested. The Global Fund will be with you to support you in your efforts. I know the energy, so let's keep the energy or the re-energizing power of this extraordinary conference when we go back to our countries to redouble our efforts against AIDS. Вот, теперь, пожалуйста, первый вопрос. Можете ли вы
представить? Hi, my name is Nikki Manguli. I'm from Advocates for Youth in Washington, D.C. Although I speak Russian, I apologize for speaking in English because I'm more familiar with terminology in English. I was born and raised in Baku, Azerbaijan, so you can imagine this session is very, very personal to me. So I wanted to ask each of one of the panel members to talk about prevention, to prevention efforts that include but not limited to needle change programs and comprehensive sex education aimed at directly at young people, LGBTQ youth, young IDUs, and young sex workers in your respective organizations and countries. And if you could also please comment on laws that exist in your respective countries that deal with, again, stigma and discrimination of people affected with the virus. Thank you.
Ваш вопрос, конечно, ответ очень долго. Так.
No podemos contestar esta pregunta. yo por lo menos, pero sí les pediría a los miembros del panel que nos den alguna respuesta concisa y después vamos a escuchar otras preguntas.
Direct the International Palliative Care Initiative of the Open Society Institute. And as you know, we work a great deal in Eastern Europe. My question or thought for discussion is, we know about the increasing number of AIDS patients. We know about the increasing number of AIDS patients who are being provided ARVs. What we don't hear about is what kind of care is provided to the patients who are not yet on ARVs. What kind of pain management and symptom control and emotional support and spiritual support are those patients receiving? We always hear about the patients on ARVs and their care, but we don't hear about the care of the patients who are not on ARVs yet. I would also like to say, I would like to know from the panel what kind of progress is being made in Eastern Europe on the availability of opioid analgesics for pain management in IV drug users. Because it's my understanding that in many countries this is a forbidden practice, and therefore the pain management of an advanced AIDS patient is not appropriately treated. So I would say that with all of the progress we've made on HIV/AIDS care and treatment, we must not forget about the patients who are receiving no care and treatment because they're not on ARVs yet. Thank you.
Thank you. Третий вопрос, пожалуйста.
Good morning, this is Mari Klinheim from Norwegian Church Aid. I will speak in English. Thank you for interesting presentations. I have a question to the panelists. Some of you have mentioned the importance of the involvement of non-governmental organization and civil society. And I would like to know, how do you see the role of the churches and the faith-based organizations? Are they a driving positive force in this work, or are they a hindrance? Would like to have you comment on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I hope we'll also have some questions in Russian coming up. So let's start with the answers. Константин, хочешь начать?
Okay. Я начну, наверное,
and I we'll have to translate some of the questions for my colleagues because our translation equipment is not working at the podium here. Well, you, all you need to do is just to set it up further away from the podium and you will understand. Well, the first issue had to do with coverage of IDUs. I would say that this is the key issue when we're talking about the reform of the system of harm reduction and expanding access to treatment, because we have the trend of drug users becoming younger and younger. When we just started work in the late 80s, we've seen a much older group of drug users. Now we deal with younger people who are starting with stimulants and then quickly switch to injected drugs. And unfortunately, the system is not prepared to deal with such a wave. And what we did is we strengthened the component of psychiatric health and mental health on how to help young people who are suffering from depression and other mental health deficiencies. And again, we're working with health professionals in order to gear them more toward the younger generation. As far as stigmatization and discrimination, yes, we do have a number of laws that protect general population from discrimination and stigma, but nevertheless, it is present. And for our country, the most serious problem is discrimination in educational facilities and institutions, especially in the preschool and further integration of these kids in the general education system, and then further discrimination of them at the workplace. On the second issue, thank you very much, Mary. This is a huge question. It's a huge issue of great proportions, and somehow we missed it in our presentation. What can I say about the efforts that are geared on introduction of substitution therapy? We had some far-going results. And a lot of companies received licenses working with controlled drugs. In 2006, out of more than 500 institutions, only two had licenses, and one of them was about to expire as far as controlled drugs are concerned. And the second issue that we're facing is the introduction of new standards on care to HIV infected people. We have old standards, but I think they have to be reviewed and revised in order they would be more tied to practice. We've got to be more concise, please, because we don't have enough time. Farida, please. Okay, no, Alexander is ready. On the first issue, on the legal framework, in the Russian Federation, we have a law on HIV that stipulates a lot of guidelines and talks specifically about prevention. And there's a number of regulations that are issued under the auspices of both Ministry of Healthcare and Ministry of Education that also help. But I would like to talk a little bit about so-called substitution therapy. Maybe many of you would disagree with me. But we had this situation on harm reduction 5 years ago. We worked with the Ministry of Internal Affairs for 5 years, and finally they realized that the harm reduction program is a good thing. Unfortunately, during the administrative reform in the country, functions shifted to new agencies. We haven't worked with them before, and now we have to start from the first step, from the beginning, of, and explain them and go through this whole educational process with them. These terms such as substitution therapy, I think, is a great deal of hypocrisy in this name. When we're talking about that, we need to put them on substitution therapy. What kind of therapy are you talking about? This is a trap. This is not substitution therapy. This is we should talk about harm reduction, because it's a real harm reduction. We shouldn't use this word, substitution therapy, because people don't see anything beyond, you know, substituting one controlled drug for another controlled drug. Unfortunately, when we're talking about substitute therapy, it's not therapy per se. We're just reducing harm. The main thing is make sure that they would come and receive this harm reduction therapy. Yes, 96% of those who are registered are receiving this therapy. And I must say that a lot of social workers are just chasing those HIV-positive people, asking them to enroll, asking them to receive these services. I'm not saying that substitution therapy is not positive, but unfortunately, the current laws in Russia would not allow for effective harm reduction, including substitution therapy. I can't comment on the expediency of laws in my country. I have to obey them. I'm not making them. But of course, citizens can initiate changes of the legal system. But as far as integrated cumulative care, We do have these programs, and our respected chairman is one of the people overseeing these programs. But of course, it's a drop in the bucket. Unfortunately, we have this principle when, in the first place, diagnostics and treatment are funded as high priorities, and other types of care are underfunded. As far as position of the churches on the issue, they're very complicated. But last year we signed a memorandum of understanding and joint efforts in this area, and we already have a few positive steps. We agreed on the following. No one is mandating church officials to distribute condoms or brochures about the use of condoms. But as far as family values are concerned, moral values are concerned, they can have a blank check, pretty much do whatever they can to enforce those values. And we have representatives of this project. Ekaterina Ustinova, could you please rise? Yes, here she is. She will talk a little bit more about faith-based initiatives in Russia. Thank you very much. I would like to ask presenters to be very concise. But thank you very much for your answers. Farida. Well, in our country, just like in many other countries in the region, we have a serious issue with ID use. As you know, Tajikistan is bordering with Afghanistan. This is the main source country of drugs for the entire world. I must say that in the 90s, when our country went through a civil war, a lot of young people became addicted to drugs. And now, in the post-war period, in the 21st century, we have noticed a reduction in intravenous drug use. And right now, Tajikistan experiences a phase of concentrated epidemics, and we run a survey among IDUs. Right now, we have only 1,200 cases of HIV. We conducted this project jointly with Johns Hopkins Medical Center, we had one survey was about 12% of HIV positive among the registered population, and 2 years later we had the similar survey, and these figures stayed the same, just above 12%. Okay, Alexei, maybe really quickly, because I see other people queuing up to the microphone, I'll try to say a few words about the first issue, as far as what's important and what kind of services are provided in Russia for vulnerable groups, and about the potential of our region. And we'll look at it pragmatically. In the near future, we'll primarily look at three target groups. So the first group is what's already done and fairly well funded by the government, regardless. So whether you're a sex worker, an IDU, it's a typical example would be ART, and we have a tremendous progress. On the opposite pole, we have another issue, and we probably would not see a lot of progress in the near future. OST, for ideological reasons, and because we only might have just pilot projects, but if we even invest in this issue, we would not achieve a lot. But in the middle, we would have a number of different interventions that are being honed and that prove their efficiency, but they might be closed down after Global Fund would withdraw. It's a typical programs and model programs on harm reduction. We shouldn't really worry about the first group. We shouldn't worry about the second group, but we need to worry about the second group. This one's in the middle. It might expire in 2 years or so. Thank you very much. Let's say we have five people, five questions.
First of all,
Patricio, please.
Thanks, Michel. You, the organizers at the beginning mentioned we could pose questions in Russian, English, or Spanish. So I will, since I am a Latin American, I would like to use Spanish just to congratulate the organizers. Felicitaciones, amigos, y bienvenidos a México. So the second thing...
Thank you. Gracias, Pesiva.
So now I'm going to switch into English. As Professor Kashansky mentioned, a lot of effort has been made in Eastern Europe and Central Asia, particularly in the Russian Federation, to address the challenge of HIV/AIDS over the last 4 years. I do believe that we have a situation where we have a half-full glass. And some of the challenges, as Professor Kachansky mentioned, are related to the need to establish a better equilibrium between prevention, treatment, and care. And certainly prevention is lagging behind. And within that context, I have two specific questions. One for our colleague Farid from Central Asia. And that question is related to the process of integrating the different national HIV/AIDS programs and projects as part of overall health systems strengthening programs. In the case of Central Asia, I think it's critical that as part of the prevention effort to address the unnecessary risk and very high risk of spreading HIV/AIDS as a result of contaminated blood. So my question is, what is being done, what are the decisions by the governments in order to ensure safe blood supplies within the system? And the second question is related to Alexander. From your perspective, Alexander, and also to Alexei, what concrete steps do you foresee that should be taken in order to broaden the harm reduction strategies, particularly in the Russian Federation, in order to increase the effectiveness of the struggle against HIV/AIDS? Thanks.
Gracias, Patricia. You're such a nice person, but it took you 3.5 minutes to ask your question.
Андрій Клепіков, Міжнародний альянс по ВІЧ-СПІД в Україні. Пієн по гранту першого і шостого раунду.
Bien. Soy Andrei de la Alianza Internacional de SIDA.
Questions. First of all, I would like to call all of us for honesty and good faith as far as evaluation of the real situation concerned. I would be surprised by this figure, up to almost 100% have drug therapy and ART available. Now, in Ukraine, the demand is greater than 100%. Please be honest. Let's talk about apples and apples. Let's compare apples and apples. And as far as origin is concerned, as you know, the epidemic is driven by intravenous drug use, and there's a lack of substitution therapy. The fact that we're lagging so much behind is not just a deficiency. This is a crime against people we serve. And also, yes, we'll say we're behind, we're in the shithole, excuse my French, but we never will never get ahead. We need to see some progress. We need to see and recognize some accomplishments. And in Ukraine, the factor of reduction of new incidents is very important. Now, we have the largest packet of measures on harm reduction. We initiated the program of methadone treatment, and now we're initiating a program on stimulants. I hope this program will continue. Thank you.
Well, the question to the Mr. Golyusov. All of you know that people that live with HIV, they don't have permits to come into the country and get permits, residence permits. For each of our region, after 3 months, you have to provide a report from a doctor that says that the person is not HIV positive, and then the person is deported. You know that President Bush signed a law that that there is no ban for people like that come enter the United States from now on. Are there any plans in our countries to do that? I'm Anastasia Kovico, the program on AIDS and HIV. Two more questions, please. Eugenie Pisemsky, All Russian Association of People Living with AIDS. I also have a question for Mr. Griusov. What are the actions in prevention in the groups like MSM that you are planning in the Russian Federation? Thank you. Vyacheslav Sunyks, the Russian Association of the People Living with AIDS. This time, I'm not here to ask the questions that sometimes there are no answers for those questions, but I want to comment. I am a regular person that lives with HIV. I want to thank our government for all the new things that they are doing for people that are living with HIV. I can feel those benefits. As an activist, I see a lot is done in this direction, in this field, and I'm very thankful to my government for those actions. Everything that we can solve is great, but I would like you to meet with other associations. We have a few plans and a few papers, a few proposals that we would like to propose during the May conference. We do have some suggestions that are following that conference. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, who wants to start? Farida. I have a question on blood transfusions, the safety of donated blood in Tajikistan. Nowadays, we are allotting huge financial resources through our Asia Bank. We are buying equipment, we are buying the testing systems in order to test the virus-created hepatitis, syphilis, HIV. We are working on providing a lot of training sessions, consultations, and so on. I think that about the safety of blood transfusions, I think that we are going into the right direction. Alexander Timofeyevich, please. About the safety of blood transfusions. I know Patricio for a long time. He's been at the World Bank for a while. I think he has a reason to ask these questions. Thank you, the World Bank, for the grant that you gave us. And the grant provided us the instruments and the equipment for blood to test the blood safety. Thank you. Like, if we talk on the large scale, we have a program to integrated. It's this blood screening program. Our country is huge, as you know, and each region is at the different technical levels. So the program is not applied to all the regions yet. But the donated blood is actually tested by the standards of World Health Organization. We are working on a program when we will try to start to implicate this program up to 100%. What's the name of the program? I forgot the name of the program. I'm sorry. The program of testing the blood. When this program will be working all the way and globally, we will actually be able to avoid the mistakes that we have. Every year we have 3 to 4 cases when we failed to test the blood appropriately. Now, the question about widening the programs on harm reduction. Right now, at the present, finally, we have finalized, together with our state narco-controlling agency, we have the manuals, and we're starting to integrate those programs, implement those programs in our country. I don't want to lie to you. We're trying to work it out for the last 3 years. We're working with the state agencies, and we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, finally. Now, the statistics, there were some comments about our slides, about the high percentage of people that are treated. I'm saying it again. This is the statistics that is based on the number of people that have been registered, the people that have been already diagnosed, the people that are in the treatment already. Of course, there is a big part of the population that didn't come to us, that hasn't had registered. Or, of course, we can say whatever we can, but I have been offered. I offered this so many times. Let's research. Let's do a study. Let's try to figure out what is the percentage of the people that has not been registered and has been not been screened and treated. Let's do that study. I ask you, let's do it. Now, about the changes in the laws of immigration laws, this is a very painful question, especially for Russia. Why? We do come along this kind of situations. There are the doctors here, the specialists in the field of AIDS. Their husband is HIV positive and the woman has AIDS. One is from Azerbaijan, the other one is from Russia. What do we do? The law is making it very complicated. We have to change this law. We want to try to change legislation. I don't know how successful it will be. But we do have those very negative signals that are coming to us. I am the Rospotrebnadzor. Our organization really tries to work to change legislation in order to make people's lives a little bit easier. And unfortunately, right now, people do get deported. Now, what about MSM? What is the government planning to do about it? The government is not planning on anything and is not doing any programs in that field. Everybody from the Russian delegation can ask them. They all agree. We also are doing a few things, but those are tiny, tiny little crumbs. It's not under the things that we're doing are not under federal programs. The things that we do are financed by small sponsors. Some organizations work on programs like that, Lasky and so on. Meanwhile, nowadays, we cannot incorporate this particular segment into our program. We want to work with you. Yes. Yes, we want to include the programs of prevention among MSM into our federal program. My dear colleagues, the time has expired. Thank you very much. Thanks to all the delegates. Thank you, all the participants. I think that the presentations and all the vibe of this session shows that on one hand there are things that we can be proud of. The progress has been incredible. It's fantastic. On the other hand, we have lots and lots of problems. Some of the problems are technical problems. Some are strategic problems. It's hard to find solutions for some of those problems, but we do have wonderful perspectives for those problems. We are honest, we are open to create a dialogue. We have pretty large financial resources. We have professionals, highly educated professionals, and experienced doctors. Good luck and lots of success to all of us. Alexei Tsurik, please come over. I want to talk to you.